Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
The Michael Reed Show podcast. Tune in weekdays from 9 on LMFM. To contact us, email now, michael@lmfm.ie.
Monday morning, the 22nd of April. Good morning. With much debate and discussion from now till 11 a.m, this is Michael Reed on LMFM. The Garda Commissioner, Drew Harris, says that the use of posters outside of homes could constitute harassment and reminded Gardaí of their powers. Now, this follows an anti-immigration protest that occurred outside the home of the Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman, where masked men attached banners to a fence calling for the closure of borders. The Taoiseach and opposition TDs have condemned the protest, with the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, describing it as vile and repulsive. McEntee has indicated a willingness to examine new laws that could make protesting outside the homes of politicians illegal. The Garda Commissioner has emphasised the imperative of protecting citizens from abusive behaviour with a reasonable suspicion of criminality and urged an appropriate and adequate response from Gardaí. The Minister, Roderick O'Gorman, warned that protests targeting elected representatives could undermine democracy. A member of the far right involved in the protests outside of O'Gorman's house is suspected of being involved in the Dublin riots, and this includes the burning of a Garda squad car.
The masked men who gathered outside his home last Thursday night do not represent our people or our national flag. They do a disservice to us.
And by the way, some of the people who attended that protest are said to be part of a gang that brought a mock gallows to the Dáil last September in what they believed was democratic expression.
We surely cannot let such intimidation hold sway.
And that is the Minister for the Environment, the Green Party leader, making those comments as a part of his leader's speech to the Green Party conference on Saturday evening. But this is a problem that is becoming more commonplace. It's certainly not by any manner of means new problem and one that we have seen in the past. In the next few moments, we're going to be speaking with Labour Party TD Jed Nash, who is based in Drogheda and indeed was subject to one of these protests himself outside of his home. And I know that protests are generally accepted as being something that people should be entitled to do, but there's a time and a place for everything. And I think one of the problems that people have when others decide to stage a protest outside of their home is that there are people who are innocent to the gripes that the protesters may have who are caught up in all of this. And it can be quite intimidating for partners, for husbands, for wives, for children, and indeed for neighbours when these things happen. As I say, Labour Party TD for Louth, Jed Nash, has come into us this morning. And this is something that you experienced firsthand. I know you've said in the past that something should be done to stop it. I think that what happened on Saturday at Roderick O'Gorman's home has focused minds now, and the Garda Commissioner and Minister for Justice speaking about it. Do we need standalone offences, do you think?
I've grappled with this, Michael, for some time, given the position that I have in terms of my respect to right respect for the right to protest, to demonstrate. We are a democratic country. There are thankfully a number of ways, countless ways indeed, where you can hold politicians in government and opposition to account. That's only right.
And the ballot box, of course.
The ballot box, principally the way it's done. As you say yourself, I mean, this is not new. It's not new to me. I had experiences myself of demonstrations outside my own small family home in the middle of Drogheda, 2014, 2015. It's not nice. It's never about policy. It's never about truly holding anybody to account. It's designed to intimidate, to threaten. And I think what we do need, at the very least, is a more robust Garda response, quite frankly. What Minister O'Gorman and his family had to experience last Thursday was completely unacceptable in any democratic society. There is no just cause for anyone. And if they believe they have a just cause, I think that's diminished by the way they behave.
Mm. But when you're inside a house, looking out through the window at a group of people unknown to you, who you can't identify because they're masked, who are probably shouting vulgarities at you, and are then defacing your property, your mind starts to race, doesn't it? I mean, you can't feel with any certainty that you're safe in your own home.
Listen, there should be a degree of sanctity about your own home. We all live in the real world and things do happen. I do fear, Michael, that we said before, we were kind of congratulating ourselves to a point that there was no real extreme far-right activity in Ireland, that no politician has to date been violently assaulted or worse. We remember what happened to the Labour MP Joe Cox just a few short years ago. Conservative Party MP as well was killed in the line of his work a couple of short years ago. And I genuinely believe, given the atmosphere that's out there at the moment and the impunity with which certain people seem to be allowed to carry on their undemocratic activities, I believe that it is probably inevitable that a public representative, whether it be a councillor, TD, senator, minister, is violently attacked or worse in this country. And what happens then?
Such a small amount of people, though.
A very small amount of people. And it's not representative at all. Yeah. The vast majority of people who I engage with, and I've been on more protests than most people have had hot dinners. It's what we do. Mm. We sometimes take our concerns to the streets. We sometimes take it to, government departments and so on. There's various ways to do it. And that's acceptable. Mm. And that's perfectly legitimate. Even constituency offices, I encourage anybody, if they have a genuine political issue, meet, engage, discuss the issue. Some people have protested outside constituency offices over the years. That, I think, even to a point, is fair enough, even though there may be staff there who are not party political. They're doing a job helping us to represent the interests of our constituents. And that can be difficult too, of course, but there are many ways to express your concern about the political direction of the country. And we've a kind of a new phenomenon
now as
well.
We need something more, though, than logic, don't we? I mean, because what we're seeing, as you say, is an accident waiting to happen. It's a bit like a slow car crash. Eventually, we'll turn around and say, oh, God.
We should have done something.
Yeah, we knew we should have done something, and we didn't. And I hate to say I told you so and all of that, but something will happen if this is allowed to continue.
I think so, and the atmosphere at the moment is absolutely poisonous. It's toxic. There's an unfortunate situation as well, and I'd appeal to everybody to watch their language, to only use language when they're engaging with people that is fair, that's reasonable.
You're using logic again, though. Do you remember years ago? I mean, this is sort of a new phenomenon, and it's only new because these people have somewhere to meet called the internet. But years ago, there used to be fellas falling off bar stools and pubs. They'd be telling you all about the world. And everybody with any ounce of sense, I would say, I don't mind your man, he's on it again, there's a dozen or a couple of hundred of those from different corners of the country who have come together, and it's like one great barroom drunk shouting his head off, using vulgarities, and knows better than those who've set out to try and do something by sitting there comfortable in the sidelines. But we're imagining that it's a big group when it's not. It's only the barroom drunks who come together on the internet.
It's not, that's right. And we do know as well that the activities of this small number of people is being, we are told, monitored by An Garda Síochána. Situation we had outside Minister O'Gorman's home last week was, in a way, extraordinary, given that it wasn't just a demonstration. What it was a bunch of masked men, and I understand it was mostly, if not exclusively, male, putting up banners on the railings of the minister's home. It didn't seem to me, and we know the Gardaí have a difficult job to do, that there weren't too many efforts being made to remove those banners or to move those individuals on. I do believe that there should be a more robust response from O'Gardaí Síochána.
Well, we do have laws.
In cases, we have. Yeah. But and
trespass.
And one, for example, is, I mean, it was mentioned to me over the weekend by a legal academic who I have the utmost respect for. He said there were, if you're prepared to see it, effective breaches of the peace taking place there. And there are laws around breach of the peace. And in any case, if somebody has a political cause that they want to represent, take your mask off. Out yourself, have the courage, have the balls,
but the
to show people who you are.
The idea is to intimidate you.
Well, that's right. I've no respect for anybody who doesn't identify who it is they are. If they say they are representing a cause, and that's why I go back to the point I made earlier. It's never about a cause. It's thuggery. It's intimidation. It's harassment. It's the threat of violence, it's often a case of very small men. And I mean that in every sense of the word. Trying to feel important, and the internet has made them feel important, and we're in a dangerous inflection point here, I think, in our society, Michael, and something will happen. Something will happen.
Well, I mean, there are existing laws. To my mind, if I'd been in that house, I'd have said that the peace had been breached because I don't know what the minister was doing, but if he was reading or watching television or fixing a light bulb, things changed all of a sudden. And I can't imagine how you would have felt secure at that moment in time with a group of masked men outside. There was trespass, there was defacing property. There was all sorts of things under existing laws that could have at least led to an arrest, if not a prosecution. But something needs to be done to deter people from believing that they can turn up anywhere they want and do practically whatever they wish, unless we want something to occur that we regret afterwards.
There seemed to be cross-party support last year for a piece of legislation brought forward by Fianna Fáil Senator Malcolm Byrne that would prohibit certain forms of protest at the homes of elected representatives. I understand from reading about that legislation that it's been done in the US, I think in certain states, and it's been done in Canada as well, after the home of the chief medical officer was targeted in the context of, I think, Canada's response to the pandemic by some of the same people who, if they're not anti-migrant, they have suspicions. Apparently they're scientists as well, over COVID vaccinations. And in fact, whether there was a pandemic at all. There's also as well, I think, in the context, I'm sorry to say this, but we see it far too often in the language and so on that's used to target Minister O'Gorman. Much of it is homophobic. It's disgusting. It's disgraceful. And we shouldn't be surprised either that a lot of these people, quite frankly, from the language that they use and the way they behave, they're homophobes, they're misogynistic as well. They don't value women.
They're barroom drunks, aren't they? You know,
Of the worst kind. A drunk sobers up and often apologises. I've had people say various things about me online and so on over the years. That happens in politics. And they come up to you the next time they see you and they apologise. They may have been having a bad day and you accept that and you understand and you move on. There used to be a time when if people had an issue with you, they'd come and meet you and you'd talk it out. And the problem now, I think, is, Michael, that politics and the job that we do, the job that we've been asked to. Remember, it's a democracy. Mm. We were elected to do this.
Yeah.
And you have a chance.
Oh, those fellas.
You have a chance in the summer, in June, to decide that you want a new bunch of councillors and members of your party. You have a chance later on in the year or early next year to decide that you want a new bunch of TDs and turf out the exist. Mm. And there's a new phenomenon now, actually, as well, that apparently the opposition is responsible for everything as well.
All right.
I'm old enough to remember when government took decisions, they were held to account by the opposition. And if the opposition turned into the government, then the opposite happened. That's how democracy should function. It's a plague in all your houses now. It's dangerous for democracy. That's not real accountability. And what you have at the moment is just an extraordinary kind of set of circumstances. You say this slow car crash. This has been coming. Over a number of years now, we've seen it all unfold. And there will be a reckoning in our society. And I think we will regret what we've allowed.
And that's why we need legislation, isn't it? Because and for those people who think that this is all right, well, let me just say to you, if you don't want to be called the drunken oaf, or if you don't want to be called a big mouth, stand for election. Because I think some of these characters have stood for election and got a handful
of
notes.
And they'll get their answer again. No, they haven't. And it's a very, very small group of people. Let's be clear about that. Most people protest respectfully and they decide that they want to express their protest through the ballot box.
And they shouldn't feel any reason for not protesting, as indeed the other side of the coin, people shouldn't feel that going into politics will end up being intimidated.
Well that's it. I mean, this is the problem that we have, and what we don't want is people who feel that they are capable of withstanding this kind of stuff going into politics. You know, you don't want the hard-nosed thick-skinned narcissist running for public office. You want people who are humane, who are compassionate, you know, who are human, who make mistakes, for example. Mm. We all do.
Yeah.
But who do what they, you know, do what they do in good faith and can respectfully disagree with people who they oppose, who they oppose, and people who oppose them. That's how it should be. Mm. What we don't want is, you know, we need more women in politics. The amount of women I've spoken to over the years about running, really talented people who've got something to give, who said, look, I take one line at what happens, one look at what happens online, and I'm not going to put myself, my partner, my children, my parents through that. So we're losing good people. People, you know, who are from, you know, maybe arrive, who now call Ireland their home, who've only been here a few years, who have a lot to give. To represent the new Ireland in all its richness and diversity. Said, I'm not doing that because I'll be targeted because of the colour of my skin, because of my religion, because of my sexuality, because of how I identify. They're not having it. Mm. So we have, frankly, too many men who look like me in politics, guys in their 40s. You know, let's be more diverse, let's be more different, let's be more reflective of the Ireland of today. We need more women, we need more people from different ethnic backgrounds who don't have it, and we wonder why.
And we've far too many barroom oafs as well who believe that the colour of your skin, your gender, your ethnicity, or any of these other things are political issues. That is where the problem lies with this small group of degenerates.
Who just take their influence and inspiration from what's going on in the US with, you know, Trump, you know, characters in the UK as well, and elsewhere. It is very, very damaging to our democracy.
Okay.
You know, I say there is legislation, it seems, that was passed in the Shannon last year about prohibiting demonstrations of certain kinds outside of the homes of public representatives. I wish we weren't even discussing that. Mm. We shouldn't be. I've mixed views on that, whether that would be effective or not. I think there's existing legislation there that can be enforced to protect everyone's interests and to protect democracy, because that's what really this is about, Michael. And we do need, I think, that robust enforcement of legislation that is there, because what we've seen is just completely unacceptable. And it will continue, and we will reach a point where we will regret allowing that to continue.
Well, we're talking about decency and respect, and unfortunately what we're witnessing is a lot of disrespect and indecent behaviour. Thank you indeed for coming in to us this morning. That is Labour Party TD for Louth and East Meath, Jed Nash.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Now we'll stay with the issue of immigration and indeed how the D Hotel in Drogheda is housing some 500 refugees, or at least that was the contract. But there is a question, of course, as we've been hearing from local Fine Gael TD Fergus O'Dowd about what's being paid to the D Hotel, because it cannot accommodate any more than 240 refugees, and that's because of its fire cert. It appears from the little correspondence that has come from the department that the department is paying the price of 500 refugees, which, as we heard last week, has resulted in almost €1 million going down the drain in 44 days, and in another 44 days that'll be another €1 million. But the price that the government pays to private operators for housing refugees, whether they're Ukrainian refugees or asylum seekers in this country, really has come under the spotlight in most more recent times. And last week at the Public Accounts Committee, there was much discussion on this. The head of the department, Kevin Carthy, finally gave a figure of an average of €76 a night per person, which is a lot of money in anybody's book, especially if you're not accommodating the person, as I mentioned earlier on. But that had to be dragged out of him. It probably would have been easier to get hen's teeth. But there were a lot of questions about what's being paid, and let's hear a little bit more from Imelda Munster, Sinn Féin TD for Louth and East Meath. And a very good morning to you, and thank you indeed for joining us on the programme this morning. I think this has been described as a licence to print money for people who are housing refugees in this country. It turns out that the government pays twice as much to private providers than it does to state-owned accommodation. Is that right?
Well, it turned out, after, as you said, after persisting and persisting, €30 per head, this is on average, for state-run facilities, and 76. So it's 76 per head for private operators. So it's actually more than double. It's 1.5 times what it would cost for the state run. It's 30, 60, yeah. But the total cost for, this is the scary one, right? The total cost of private emergency accommodation in 2023 was €627 million, right? Now, I was trying to get comparisons between state run and private, and eventually, anyway, we got it. But the, so €627 million for private emergency accommodation, but then the state run for 2023 was €13.7 million. So it's 45 times more expensive.
Right.
The private emergency accommodation, and then the total cost for 20 so far in 2024 for private emergency was, I can't remember, it was either €214 million or €219 million. I just can't remember which he said. But compare that again with the state-run IPAS centres for 2024 so far, £4.5 million.
Right.
As opposed to £214 or £219 million. I mean, it is insane.
Absolutely. And that's before you get to the Ukrainians, because the bill for refugees from Ukraine last year was £2.13 billion, I believe.
That's right, yes. Yeah, for 2023. I mean, it's just thrown money, you know, public money, with little or no accountability. And he was extremely reluctant to give those figures, because it was all about the comparison, you know, from a public accounts committee. It's the money, the taxpayers' money, and extremely. And it's only when I got them that I realised, no wonder he didn't want given those figures. But again, it's down to lack of planning. I mean, you know, the Ukrainian war in 2022. If you remember, even the Taoiseach and the Taoiseach at the time were saying, when over to Europe, they were saying, oh, we can take 250,000. Like, I think there's 108,000 Ukrainian people here now. And look at the cost, you know, and even with the new rules that they brought in recently, it's not retrospective. So the bulk of that money will continue to be paid.
But it seems as though the department is throwing money away like snuff at a wake. That issue with the D Hotel is in line with the contract that is for 2 years, that we believe is worth in the region of €25 million. But if only half of the amount of refugees are staying there, but they pay for the full amount, instead of paying €12.5 million, they're paying €25 million. €12.5 million for nothing, in other words.
Yeah, they're just handing it because of the contract. And again, I mean, the other day he had actually said, the Secretary General of the Department had said, fire safety, cert, that was a red line issue. You know, that it, that was it, full stop. Like, but even when you quiz them on inspections that they carried out, they literally, like, he couldn't confirm that they actually go in and do a physical inspection of a building. They go on the specs that they're given. So, for example, a hotel, the D Hotel or any other hotel, they look and they say X amount of beds, you know. But they, imagine forking out that those amounts of taxpayers' money without actually going into the building physically and having a list, a checklist that you tick off to make sure everything was 100% in compliance. They don't. I mean, it's just, it beggars belief. It beggars belief, you know, and listening to it, there's 225 emergency international protection centres, and even from the point of view of the inspections, you know, once they're occupied, there's the residents in those centres, there's over 4,500 children, and the level of inspections, they were arguing, what I had got from the Irish Refugee Council, the information, the department were saying, no, there was more inspections, but you know, overcrowding, there's a whole load of issues.
Staff working in these centres who are not Garda vetted, we're straight into the realm of child protection issues. And if there ends up being something untoward, there is no defence, because the only defence you have is that you vet the people working with the children.
Yes. And when that's not been done, you know... And another question I'd asked, I had got reports again that some of the centres are staffed exclusively by security staff. Now, again, he was on dodgy ground on that. It wasn't a definitive. I can tell you categorically that that's not happening. You know, there was no definitive answer. Now, you know, there are the department itself and the minister, and, you know, a lot of this has been lobbed on Roderick O'Gorman's shoulders, when in fact all he's doing is actually implementing government policy. The government didn't plan. Do you remember some time back, fairly recently, I was talking to you about the 700 modular units that they were to build last year and to have 500 of them built by June. And here we were in January this year, just 100 of those units built. I mean, they come out with these sound bites that they're doing, and nothing happens, nothing changes. But it's government policy. You can blame Roderick O'Gorman, but it's unfair to blame him solely, because he's implementing the policies agreed by the three parties in government. He's just been tasked with doing that, and his department, the whole, everything has been lobbed onto them, like, you know, to try and do, and they're under severe pressure. And you have to acknowledge that, in fairness, but to blame that Minister O'Gorman alone is disingenuous, because he's implementing government policy that was agreed between the three parties. And even going by, not that you didn't know prior to that, but going by last Thursday, they've just made a complete and utter haynes of it. Well, and taxpayers' money is being flung about with no accountability and total waste. Yeah. And then you have people that can't qualify for housing adaptation grant or can't, you know, it's just, it beggars belief.
Yeah. Well, let's take a closer look if we can. I'm going to refer to the Irish Times today, which gives us an insight into where the government is spending some of this money. There was €53.7 million paid last year to housing international protection applicants in City West. There was €30 million paid out to Brimwood Limited. This is run by Seamus McEnany, well known to many of our listeners, former Monaghan GA football manager, and his daughters. £26.5 million to the Red cow, 25.3 million to Travel Lodge Hotels, a separate payment to them of another 60 million, and there's more. One of the biggest providers of accommodation to asylum seekers in the state is Mosny, owned by Mosny Holidays Public Limited Company, accommodates several hundred asylum seekers at the former Butlins Holiday Resort in Mosny. They were paid more than 23 million euro by the department last year. The Irish Times says Drogheda-based businessman Phelan McCluskey bought that site in the 1980s for development as a holiday resort, and Mosny has been used as a direct provision centre since the inception of the system back in 2000. The other directors of Mosny are Paul McCluskey, Sarah Gates and Ruth Kearns. Its main shareholders listed as El Molino Hotels. The main owner of El Molino is Sonning Unlimited, based in the Isle of Man. But that's a lot of money to go into accommodation. I'm not sure if there's anybody listening to us this morning who has to pay 76 euro a night, every night, for the place that they call home.
Yeah, and that was just an average. So by averaging it out, there's places that are charging a lot more, but it's an obscene amount of taxpayers' money. And it comes back to the same thing. They've privatised the problem. Like, they do with everything. They've literally handed it over, and they're thrown endless amounts of taxpayers' money at whether they're developers, whether they're, you know, speculators, whether they're landlords, whether they're hotel owners, business people. They're just thrown. Like, look at the D Hotel,
yep,
apparently sold on the basis of we can make a killing, we can double the what we paid for it in 2 years.
Yep.
I mean, they're just rubbing their hands with this. They're literally rubbing their hands thinking, you know, make money that you never in a million years think you'd ever make. And the government are facilitating that by privatising the problem. Look at the comparisons we started off with at the beginning of the show. The comparisons between the private emergency and the state.
Mm.
45 times that amount. You know, that it costs more for private. And that's because the government didn't plan. And even when they didn't make announcements of building the 700 modular homes that you would have for eternity, you know, or the guts of 70, 80 years, they couldn't even fulfil that.
Mm.
They built 100 out of the 700 that they promised last year. Like, it's insane what's going on. Like, and there just doesn't seem to be. But it's a government decision and government policy. And sometimes you get so frustrated, you think, they literally make a hames of everything they touch.
Yeah.
There's no planning. It's just, you know, the handiest way is to privatise it, throw people, take hotels out of towns, but, you know, where a hotel suffers and all of that. Like,
if you take that rate, though, of 76 euro a night, that's the average, it's 27,740 euro a year per person.
Some people don't even earn that working full-time.
Mm.
You know, that's, you know, and that's 76 compared to 30 per head for a state run.
Yeah.
And there's no sign of it abating. Do you know what I mean? There's I think they said there was 5,000, slightly over 5,000 applications for international protection received this year so far. And that was over 2,000 more than the previous year. So it's not...
I think we had about 14,000 applicants last year. It's probably going to be more like 20,000 this year.
Yeah. And there's no sign of abating, and yet there's still no plan in place. And this new strategic accommodation strategy, I mean, if you look through that, it's just more of the same. It's literally more of the same. They're saying they're going to target purchase of medium and large turnkey properties. What's a medium or large turnkey property? That's a hotel. Now, he said if it's, you know, they're not going to look at, I think it was in response to myself when I was talking about the D Hotel, I just can't remember rightly, but he said, where there's only one hotel in the town, they're going to try and avoid, you know, they're not going to do that. But if you look at the policy, you know, and the targets, they're going to purchase medium and larger turnkey properties. What else is that on a hotel like?
Okay.
You know, it's and they're still talking about state land for modular units. So they're, you know, talking about that last year and delivered just 100 of them, you know.
Yeah, instead of paying out all of these money to make people rich, they could just be providing accommodation and saving a fortune.
And if they were to build they were to build those modular units, it's cost far less in the long run. You're giving employment, you're creating jobs, you're, you know, all of that thing. But none of that logic applies to government policy, you know, from what we can see.
Okay, well, we've gone over time at this stage, but we'll leave it there and thank you indeed for the moment for joining us this morning. Sinn Féin TD for Louth and East Meath, Imelda Munster.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Now, some of the comments, I think people are very taken aback by the amounts of money being spent on immigration. I'll come to the comments as they came in, but a few people saying it's crazy. Sean has been in touch and he says the government parties want to curtail the so-called disinformation on social media. How about highlighting the fake and misleading promises issued by these same parties before elections and throughout the year? Again, what's the difference? We are not gullible anymore. For me, I'd rather listen to TikTok, get other people's views, rather than being personally preached to by the Taoiseach, says Sean. Thank you, Sean, for that. I think you've got to question the accuracy of what you're reading on social media. Sometimes it's completely accurate, other times it's not. The problem you have is trying to differentiate what is accurate and what's not, Sean. And sometimes it's just damned lies and stuff that people make up. And that's why you need to take it with a grain of salt or verify what you've read on social media. Go and look at one of the news sites that are regulated who can't tell lies, like the newspapers in this country or the broadcasters in this country. Take a look at how they've been reporting on that story and see if what you read on social media is correct. Sometimes you'll find it is. Sometimes you'll find that it's not, but you know that sometimes it's just out and out rubbish. Rose has been in touch and she says, Michael, why not call in the army and demask them? Well, I would have thought that the guards could be able to do that. I don't know. Is it acceptable for people to be walking around with masks on? I suppose COVID gave a green light to that. At one time, you'd have been deemed to have been very suspicious. Lorraine Cunningham in touch saying, good morning, Michael. What a disgraceful waste of money. And they can't give our older people a decent amount to live on, especially those who are living alone. Thanks for that, Lorraine. Crazy money. It is a fairy tale. Wow. That's what Dan had to say about it all. Ellen in touch with us as well this morning. And Ellen says, I don't agree with protesting outside anybody's home, but people are so angry. Children are having their operations cancelled. And there's our government throwing money away with no accountability. Yeah, I think you make some valid points, Ellen, and everybody has the right to protest. Do it at the Dáil, do it at the TD's constituency office, do it online, hold a meeting in the centre of your town, send a message whatever way you wish, write a letter to the papers. But to go outside somebody's house, I mean, there's no doubt about it, this was very intimidating, but it's intimidating anyway if you turn up at somebody's house because you don't know what they're going to do, and that includes the politician who you're protesting, as well as their family and their neighbours. I wouldn't like somebody to be protesting outside of my neighbour's house, whether they were involved in politics or if the protest was over something else. A lot of comments coming to us. We'll come to some more of them in a moment. In the meantime, 0419832000 is our phone number if you want to add to what's being said. Text or WhatsApp 0861800658. Email michael@lmfm.ie.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Now, some more of your comments coming to us this morning. We'd John Conlon in touch saying, papers can't tell lies. Thanks, John and Ballymakenny, as always, for your message to the programme. I don't think papers ever tell lies. I think sometimes or occasionally, and it is rare, papers get it wrong. But when that happens, like with radio, you've got a right to reply or a right to complain. And if your complaint is upheld, usually a correction and an apology is put in place. Where on the internet, as we've been discussing up to now, you can more or less say whatever you want to say. We'd John in touch with us. John gave us a call this morning. Thanks for taking the time to ring us. He was commenting after our discussion earlier with Jed Nash, Labour Party TD. And John says Jed Nash was saying that people shouldn't be wearing masks when they go to someone's house. But, John says, the guards wear balaclavas when they go to people's houses to evict them. Is it a different rule for them? Unfortunately, John, you make a valid point, albeit relating to one occasion that I'm aware of, which was strongly criticised and not the type of policing that we want to see. Should never have happened, I think many would say, and many would say, I hope it never happens again on a second occasion. But thanks, John. It is, unfortunately, as I say, a valid point. Somebody else in touch with us saying, I'm not a supporter of the far right. However, listening to group think chat from your comfortable middle class men is very concerning. Callously dismissing every concern as far right is dangerous and leading to hardened positions from what were moderate people. Soundbite radio is poor broadcasting when, as you said, lives are in danger. I'm not sure which was the comment that was made that you took umbrage with from the comfortable middle class men, or why you think it's group think chat for that matter. Is it because we're concerned about intimidation, or the idea that people would turn up outside the house of somebody who has nothing to do with politics, because quite often there's people in those houses, or the people who live next door. If that's comfortable middle class think chat, sorry about you. Not sure if that's what you meant, but sorry about you. Betty Daly in touch with us this morning, and she says the people who give the go ahead for these contracts are failures. Even before a bed is filled in the D Hotel, you may be sure some minister is happy about it. Thanks, Betty. A bit of a conspiracy theory in there. I think the ministers are probably desperate to find accommodation. We'll be hearing from the Red Cross later on as well. They've renewed their appeal for people to take in Ukrainians. And as I say, we'll hear from them later in the programme today. Margaret has been texting us this morning, though, and she says, we live in a country where we have rights, as in voting, freedom of speech, and protest. The last two, within reason, of course. We are in danger of losing two of those, or some part of them, if new laws are brought in as a result of these masked, cowardly scumbags who pretend to be patriotic Irish people who say we should fear refugees. The only ones causing fear and protesting are these cowards who haven't even got the guts to show who they really are. What I can't understand is why are people in a well-educated society so thick and stupid that they believe the vile lies they read on the net? Are they not capable of using their own common sense and making up their own minds? Are they that brainwashed by what they read that someone else makes up their minds for them? No one should be allowed to protest outside anybody's home. If new laws are brought in, the finger of blame should be pointed at these thugs and no one else. Thanks for that, Margaret, as always, and good to hear from you. And speaking of discrimination, there was a lot of talk of discrimination in the Shannon last week.
My name is Letitia McCrudden and I'm 19 years of age. I'm among the 1% of Irish travellers to go on to third level education, and I've nearly completed my first year of my law degree. In my own opinion, I believe I've done well for myself in my education journey so far, having got all A's in my junior cert, a distinction in my transition year programme, and the points needed in my leaving cert to study law in the University of Galway.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
I've done a vast amount of extracurricular activities, including BT Young Scientist, GASHCA, SciFIS, the Climate Ambassador Programme of Ireland, Green Schools, John Paul II Award and the Student Council. But my school experience hasn't been as fulfilling and enjoyable as it should have been.
Well, as you heard, this is 19-year-old Letitia McCrudden, who was one of many travellers who spoke in Shannon on Thursday of last week in a session that was called Give the Floor Over to Travellers to discuss some of the issues that are impacting on them. The session was chaired by Independent Senator Eileen Flynn, who we hope to be speaking to on the programme this morning. But let's go back to Letitia and hear about some of the discrimination she has experienced in the Irish school system.
As a traveller girl in school, I found a very lonely and isolating place the majority of the time. I've been subjected to isolation, bullying, racism and discrimination, and with very few to no consequences received to those that projected it upon me. Some examples include having derogatory terms said to me by fellow students, such as the K-word, with no consequences for their actions. I know that if this type of language was used against another minority group, there would be repercussions, as there should be, but the same respect is not given to travellers. Throughout my so far 15 years of schooling, I've not once been taught about my traveller heritage or culture, but I had to study a short story from my honour level Leaving Cert Irish class that projected travellers in not a positive light. I've been isolated and left out in school due to the morals and values I have for myself and what has been instilled in me while growing up. I found being an Irish traveller in the school sector, you had to have a large amount of willpower to keep going due to the way you're made feel. This is not how it should be. Travellers should be supported, uplifted and encouraged to continue with schooling and to reduce the statistics of being a minority among a minority when they continue with education.
I don't think many of us would welcome the idea of having to stand up in Shannon Aaron and make a speech. An easy task, but doesn't it sound very easy listening to 19-year-old Letitia McCrudden, who spoke so articulately and proved that just because she's a member of an ethnic group, it doesn't mean that she doesn't have the same capabilities as other people. She's shown that through her academic success and going on to third level education. But it's not been an easy ride, as we've been hearing.
I live by the quote that the late Martin Luther King once said, "Our lives begin to end the day we become silent about things that matter." And unfortunately, there's a lot of things that should matter in education for travellers that has not taken place. There's a vast number of barriers for travellers in education that need to change now and a lot later. The elimination of barriers by a whole in the school practice by taking account of the need for pupils' cultural identity, language and values to be upheld and visible and seen in the environment, not just imaginary. Resources and supports need to be supplied at individual level to enable traveller pupils to participate across school, transport, books, uniform, digital aids, additional teacher and after-school supports, access to assessment and early intervention when needs are identified. The incorporation of anti-racism training and the Traveller Culture Plan for teachers as part of the CPD and at entry level. There also needs to be a timeline action plan to deliver the curriculum components attached to the traveller culture and history, which has been promised to us in 2020 by the government. And this needs to be included to, for the need for teacher training to deliver those.
And I suppose the point that Letitia is making in the statements is that there needs to be change, and that change needs to come about sooner rather than later.
For traveller children and young adults continuing education, then support and opportunities must become equal. Traveller youth shouldn't feel the fear and worry that if they go on to third level education and get a degree, that they will be turned away from jobs due to their identity, which is happening currently in our society. For the percentage of travellers that are employed in Ireland, currently vast majorities are employed by traveller organisations, which does not encourage younger generations of travellers to continue on in education. Extra supports and opportunities must be put in place for the current generation of travellers and the upcoming generations of our reading and writing, as when traveller children go home in the evening and do homework, their parents may not be able to read or write to the level that they deserve due to the early dropout rates for previous traveller generations in education, which automatically puts children from a non-traveller background at an advantage compared to traveller children.
There's no doubt when it's put that way that you have to agree that the odds are stacked against travellers, aren't they?
I believe for a real change to come for the bullying, racism and discrimination that takes place against travellers in school, that our culture, heritage and traditions must be embedded into the school curriculum. There also needs to be consequences to derogatory terms that are used in schools against travellers, such as the K-word, tinker and pikey, as these are not words that should be said to children and young adults without repercussions to those that use this racist and discriminative language. Society for generations has viewed travellers as one and not as the separate individuals that we are. Our heritage, culture and traditions could add a lot to society if people wanted to learn who we are as people, but instead they discriminate, isolate and judge, even if they have had no encounters with travellers. Traveller children want to feel valued and respected and be in a fair environment, something that should come automatically. Travellers want to go on and become members of the Gardaí, solicitors, doctors, nurses, vets, senators, youth workers, just like many of us already have. We've been changing as a community and progressing over time, and now is the time for society as a whole to change and progress with us, so that travellers are just as much as part of society as everyone else. Traveller youth are just as much the present and the future of this country as the rest of Ireland's youth, but the government and society need to realise, acknowledge and support this sooner rather than later. Thank you.
A deserved, a well-deserved round of applause for 19-year-old Letitia McCrudden, who was speaking in the Shannon on Thursday. The session was called Hand Over the Floor to Travellers to discuss issues relating to every aspect of life in this country. Letitia was just one of the many speakers over a two-hour period and made for very interesting listening. And we'll be discussing some of the issues, apart from those in education, that we heard Letitia raise there with Independent Senator Eileen Flynn, who chaired that session, on tomorrow's programme.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
As you might know, the Garda Representative Association conference gets underway tomorrow. The Garda Commissioner will not be attending the conference because Drew Harris has not been invited to the conference. He's not wanted there. As a result of that, the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, has said that she will not be attending the conference. This is a decision that the Minister may come to regret. At least that's according to Paul Williams, who is writing about this in the Irish Independent today. Paul Williams, special correspondent for the Irish Independent, on the line with us now. And a very good morning, Paul. Thanks for your time. Why do you think the Minister might come to regret it?
Well, I think that, you know, there's a lot of talk, or we've been reminded quite regularly recently about the old reputation of Fine Gael had been the law and order party. And when Simon Harris, the new Taoiseach, the TikTok Taoiseach, I think they call him, when he came in suddenly into the light after Leo Varadkar decided to resign, the first thing he talked about was law and order. And it is very clear amongst the ranks of Fine Gael, it's clear in anybody who's observing this, that Fine Gael have definitely lost the title of Law and Order Party. And it hasn't happened today or yesterday. It has been happening over several years now. On the Dem, on Garda Síochána, is an unprecedented crisis. Our defence of the state is in an unprecedented crisis, where we can only barely send out one ship at a time to patrol the oceans around Ireland against drug traffickers. The whole thing has fallen apart, and that's why people and politicians and the public are getting really fed up with all this, what's called the woke agenda, where they're talking more concerned about hate speech when they won't sort out the basic infrastructure of law and order and defence in the country around them. So they will come to regret it, because, like, when you see, let's go back, last September, history was made, very negative history was made by an Garda Síochána, when for the very first time in the history of the state, an Garda Síochána, the GRA, 98.7% or something like that, or 99% of Garda members voted no confidence in the Garda Commissioner. That was seismic. Then in February, to double down on that, the GRA, CEC, the Central Executive Committee, decided that they would not be inviting Drew Harris to their annual conference, which begins tomorrow. And that was a natural extension of the decision made last September. Yet again, that was another unprecedented move. Now, one of the points being made by the GRA last week, following Helen McEntee's decision or announcement that she wouldn't be attending the conference, was that she left it 6 days before the conference. And apparently now she's telling us that she has effectively been reprimanding and coaxing and urging the GRA, listen, we do not kiss and make up with the commissioner. This is what we're being told. But by virtue of the fact she says she is claiming on one hand that she is not taking sides, yet she turned around last week and she's effectively saying, you're a bunch of naughty boys and girls. I'm going to put you on the bold step because you're like the head teacher, you know, you're bullying and ganging up on the Garda Commissioner in the schoolyard, and this is not on. Now, as a result of that, we have no minister, for the very first time, no minister and no commissioner at the GRA conference. So the subtext to what she's saying is that, well, you know, the 10,000 members, this is not 10 members, this is not 100 members, this is not a couple of thousand members. This is unanimous, practically every man and woman in a Garda Síochána, 10,000 people, that we're going to completely ignore you because you're a bunch of spoiled kids and you're acting the maggot. And you know what? Go off to have your conference. We're not interested in talking to you or listening to you. That effectively is where it is.
And you're suggesting in your article today that this is a partisan position that the minister is taking, and one that is undermining the message on law and order that has come from the Taoiseach so far.
But it's completely undermined. And they have undermined their message themselves. And you know what? Like, when you look back, Michael, at the case of the guard in the Midlands, who during lockdown, and no matter how many times you iterate the story, it sounds more ridiculous than it did the last time. Remind your listeners, a guard with 30 plus years of experience and service in the guards, with a superb service record, he decides to take an unclaimed bicycle out of the Garda lockup in his station and given it to an elderly man in his neighbourhood during lockdown to help him get around, just alone. So they escalated that to the extent that they treated him like a member of the Kinahan gang. His house was searched. The elderly man's house was searched. The bike was seized. he went through 4 years of absolute hell. When people look at that, now politicians are not immune to all of this. And the backbenchers in Fine Gael are getting very, very antsy about this. And they're talking about it in a way that you wouldn't have heard them talking about 12 months ago. And they're saying, we made a bad decision here. And bad decisions have been made right along. But when you see a situation arising, now we can't go into much detail of it, whereby now it's illegal, like you can put guards into squad cars to patrol around Drogheda. But there's a certain group of guards driving around Drogheda today who will get a call on the radio to say there's an attack taking place on Main Street. And they go instinctively towards the trouble. Now, if they make the mistake in their enthusiasm to get to the job, the driver, who shouldn't have been in the car in the first place, and they put on the sirens, that cop is potentially going to face criminal charges. Now, when you see that kind of scenario developing, you have to sit back and say, Jesus Christ, we've completely lost the plot. And And the public, none of this is lost on the public. I've heard so many people, like, people come up to you and talk to you about it in the pub, say, by the way, what's happening with the guards? What's that? And when you hear the ordinary man on the street mentioning that, it means it's getting traction. It's getting traction politically. I think they're going to make a massive, they massively regret bringing in Drew Harris, because it just hasn't worked for him or for them. But at the same time, we're also in this extraordinary situation, Michael, where national security, our state security, the equivalent of our MI5, MI6, is on Garda Síochána. And we now have the incredible situation. We're the only country probably in the Western democratic and developed world where our national security is in the hands of two non-Irish citizens, namely the Garda Commissioner Drew Harris, who was an order of the British Empire and a former RUC man, and a Canadian cop, who's the, she, they are the two people in charge of our national security. At the moment, we have, there is a vacancy for the deputy commissioner, which is one of the most important positions in on Garda Síochána, and none of the people who are naturally qualified for that job, as in the existing assistant commissioners, will apply for it. Why? Because of an anomaly in the pension scheme, the pension system, which was introduced by Fine Gael, which basically means that each and every, if an assistant commissioner today takes the job of deputy commissioner and then goes on forward to commissioner, they on average are facing tax bills when they retire of over €200,000. At the moment, each assistant commissioner is accruing $5,000 extra onto a tax bill for the retirement when they leave.
Right.
The thing, Michael, is a mess, an absolute mess.
All right. But is the GRA justified in not inviting the commissioner? Because that vote last September hinged on many issues that they have with the commissioner, but predominantly on rosters, which is being solved.
I think absolutely there is an argument for that, but it means that the depth of feeling and anger towards them is grunge, runs much deeper than just rosters. That this is a level of antipathy that has never been witnessed before. So he has completely lost the dressing.
Is that because of his stewardship, or is it because of how I think you phrased it? He's a citizen of the British Empire and a former RUC officer, and that he didn't come from the ranks of an Garda Síochána. Was there a natural resentment to this outsider coming in that hasn't been sorted?
I don't believe there was. In fact, the GRA and the ordinary rank and file were the first people to welcome Drew Harris. Because they said a new broom, because the guards on the ground were getting fed up with the way their own management were bickering and fighting amongst themselves. And in fairness, the government did at the time feel that they were in a corner, that they had to bring an outsider in. The problem with Drew Harris is a very, very strict disciplinarian. He does not understand the culture of policing in Ireland, where the guard has a unique relationship with the community. And all the nonsense about community policing, it's all twaddle and PR spin. The way they changed the divisions and the Garda regions, all of that is coming back to haunt them and will come back to haunt them. They keep talking about we're restructuring the whole thing so that it works better. It's not working better. And the cops on the ground will tell you that, it, particularly in rural Ireland, there are whole chunks of rural Ireland where there is no proper police cover, and that's a fact.
Where's the solution to all of this? I'm sorry, Paul, to cut across you. I think you were going to add to that.
No, I'm
judging where the solution is. I mean, we have stalemate. It's an impasse, it would seem, and it's been worsened, no doubt, by the minister's decision not to attend the conference. But you have that original problem. I mean, how can someone lead a police force if there's no confidence in that leadership?
Absolutely not. And like Helen McEntee could have shown herself to be, like, in fairness, look, we have to be, she's a very nice person and she's a very capable politician. The Justice Ministry is like what Brian Cowan one time referred to Department of Health as Angola. Well, this is the Congo, and it is a very, very tough job. But she could have been seen to be more magnanimous. She could have been seen to be the peacemaker and come along and say, look, can we not work together here? Can we not sort out these problems? Rather than taking and putting them all, like as I said in the paper today, like this head teacher, you're all naughty boys and girls, I'm putting you on the bold step for picking on poor Drew. she, as a result of her not going and isolating herself even further, you can't, by the way, Michael, underestimate the level of anger and demoralization out there. And it is happening on a granular level every day of the week. There are guards being suspended just for doing their jobs. That's what I was referring to, the squad car analogy there. And the guard with the bike. The guard with the bike is only the tip of the iceberg. And the thing is that, so they needed buy-in to all of this. And you get to a stage whereby they say, look, we just can't hack with this anymore. And you now see former senior and well-respected Gardaí it's going public and saying, by the way, for the first time ever in the history of an Garda Síochána, under Drew Harris, when a guard instinctively goes to run towards trouble, they have to stop themselves now and think before they go forward to take on the trouble ahead of them and the unpredictable nature of what they're going to deal with. They have to glance over their shoulder, say, hang on a minute, if I do this, these guys in my own organization may suspend me and treat me like a criminal for doing my job. So you're in this impossible position, as I said to you before, Michael, many times, the people who suffer are the people listening to this radio this morning. And Drew Harris will be gone in a year's time. And we will still have to have a guard, a police force to police us. It's about time they got back to brass tacks. Like the policing authorities, a lot of people don't even know what they're at. They're sitting back just looking at this and they're not intervening. I don't know what they're there for. You have then this GSOC, which seems to be completely unfit for purpose. It takes on investigations. It lasts 4 and 5 and 6 years. But going back to the guards in the Midlands who gave the bicycle, Drew Harris had to have personal knowledge of that case from start to finish, because under the way the system works in the guards, he makes it, apprises himself and appraises himself of every single suspension and what it's about. Somebody in Garda headquarters, him or certainly somebody who he would be talking to every day, decided to send the NBCI, the National Bureau of Criminal Investigation, Ireland's FBI, down to search a police officer's house to seek what they find, two bicycle wheels and a bicycle. Like, you know, if this was the old that thing, Police Academy, this is Police Academy 24. This is like as ludicrous and as mad as anything any fictional writer could possibly try to make up.
Right. And is this conference not the opportunity to relay those criticisms or whichever criticisms or concerns members of the force have to the commissioner, or does that age-old practice not work anyway? Do commissioners not necessarily listen? Is that the point?
Well, I think that's the point. I think the old attitude of ministers and their advisors in the Department of Justice was, the GRA, they're only a bunch of whingers, and they'd be moaning and crying and whinging. And every year we'd hear something about morale and demoralisation and all of this kind of stuff, and they want more equipment and they want better conditions. You will hear all of that. But this time, the anger is real and the anger is much rawer than it has ever been before. And they feel like they're not being spoken to. Like, for example, somebody was telling me in the GRA that when the commissioner did attend other previous GRA conferences, he barely spoke to people. He's a very standoffish, aloof type of police officer. And that they felt that this man doesn't really have much interest in them. Like, his attitude has been, you will do it as I say it, and that's it. There is no other way around it. So it's very, very sad. It's very, very tough, and it's very sad for the minister. But, like, you know, she has the cudgels in her hands. She needs to do something about it, because either she's going to try and assuage the 10,000 Irish citizens who are in the Garda Síochána and have done this, overwhelmingly voted no confidence and broke all the precedents of the past 100 years. She either listens to them or tries to assuage them or ignores them at her peril. And I think at the moment, I think, Michael, they have absolutely lost the title of Law and Order Party. They have, as I said to you earlier, and this is an even greater crisis, as big a crisis, and that is our defence infrastructure has fallen apart under Fine Gael. They've been warned about this for 10 years. They did nothing to do anything to confront it. We had a major drug operation off the coast about 2 months ago, and there was not a ship, there was no ship available to set to sea for the Navy to patrol it. The Department of Defence disingenuously and typical, like the public servants behind this are a disgrace. They come out making this anodyne statement that, The drug interdiction is down to the customs and the Gardaí. The Navy have nothing to do with it. Yet 6 months ago, the Navy were an integral part of drug interdiction at sea, obviously, along with the Air Corps, when they seized €400-500 million worth of cocaine. And then they just changed the narrative to suit themselves. It is an absolute mess.
Well, very strong opinions there, and many of them recorded in the Irish Independent today, which I think will be of much interest to the members of the GRA, possibly the Commissioner and possibly the Minister for that matter. Paul, thank you, as always, for joining us today.
Thanks, Mike.
That's Paul Williams, Special Correspondent with the Irish Independent.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Now let's talk about rubbish and what you put in the bin, or which bin you put it in, more to the point, because we all have two or three bins at this stage, and there's other items that need to be recycled in different ways. How are you with all of that? Do you recycle everything in the way that you should and not contaminate it with other products, or do you kind of do your best, or how does it work in your house? Well, Repack, which is responsible for recycling in this country, has sought to find out exactly the answer to that question, and they've released the findings of this survey today to mark Earth Day. Laura Sheary, Head of Marketing and Communications with Repack, is on the line. And a very good morning to you, Laura. Thanks for joining us on the programme.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
How are we doing as a country of people in terms of the way we dispose of stuff?
Well, there's definitely still a knowledge gap. From our research, we found that just 34% said they confidently understood the recycling processes, and a third finding recycling straightforward. So we do know there's a gap in people's recycling knowledge. And what we're trying to do is help people by giving them the advice and asking them to take a simple action, one action, to separate their packaging properly for Earth Day and going forward, of course, as well. But really, we're trying to encourage it on Earth Day to separate your packaging properly, so we can increase recycling across the materials. So we have paper and cardboard, glass. Obviously, we know glass goes to your bottle bank. All your plastics, that's your hard plastics and your soft plastics, all of them can go into your recycling bin. Your aluminium, that can go into your recycling bin.
Like tinfoil. Tinfoil,
you scrunch that up into a ball.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
Put it into a ball. The machines actually detect it better. I mentioned plastics. We know that all soft plastics can go into the recycling bin now as well. So anything that you can scrunch up into your hand is a soft plastics. Pop them in, and clean, dry, loose. So that's our mantra. So when it comes to recycling, make sure all your materials are clean, so they're not, as you said there earlier, contaminated with other foods, that they're dry, that they're not wet, and make sure that they're loose. So you don't put all your materials into a big cardboard box and squash it in. Make sure that they're all loose going into the recycling bin.
What does contaminated mean? I'm thinking of a pizza box, actually. If a bit of the pizza got on the cardboard, is that recyclable?
Well, it'll probably be removed in the recycling facilities, but try and not have any food waste or soiled, like napkins. Nappies can also be a problem in the recycling bin. So we know that there is contamination in the recycling bin.
Nappies?
Nappies can be found. Yeah, we find all sorts in recycling facilities. So it's really to ensure that the material is, that you're sorting it, that you're sorting your packaging away from the other materials in your house, and putting it, all the packaging, into the recycling bin, clean, dry, and loose.
What other kind of mistakes do people make?
Grass cuttings can also go into we found the grass cuttings in the recycling bin.
If you have a brown bin, they can go into the brown bin.
Goes into the brown bin.
If you have a compost bin.
Textiles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, your compost, yeah. Mm-hmm. Compost yeah. bin. Then. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, we have, when we talk about contamination, we found, you know, textiles, batteries, things like that, you know, grass cuttings. So it's really just looking at you know, you have to remember it's in your hands in your household, or, you know, in the workplace. The packaging is in your hand. So just place it into the recycling bin, sort it away from the other materials.
What about polystyrene?
That can be brought to your local recycling centre. So there's recycling centres all across the country.
But not in your recycling bin?
No, not in a recycling bin.
Okay, I think some people do that because they think it's plastic. Plastic has been confusing a lot of us for a long time, because some plastic can be recycled and some can't.
Exactly, some can't. But we're working really diligently with the recovery operators, and the technology is getting much more sophisticated across AI, so that it's able to detect what plastics, so you have your hard plastics and your soft plastics. So what we would say is definitely put all your plastics into your recycling bin. Ireland is at a critical point in its recycling with plastic. So we're currently forecast to miss our 2025 EU target for plastic. So the target is 50%. So we really need to take extra steps now to educate ourselves and make sure that we're separating our all of our packaging into the recycling bin, clean, dry and loose. And that includes all your plastics, your hard plastics and your soft plastics.
We've some work to do on that, because 70% of plastics are currently incinerated. So that has to change if we're going to get to that EU target of 50% of all plastics being recycled by next year. As you say, as part of the effort to improve on recycling, we've introduced this return deposit scheme on plastic bottles and cans. I've heard some complaints about it. I was talking to somebody yesterday who said that after finding some place to store these plastic bottles and cans, which is a lot of space because they can't be damaged in any way, they ended up going over and using the machine. After a long time, they got €9 back. But they thought between the time and the effort that was involved in the whole thing, that they'd prefer if they were just putting them in their green bins, and they'd be put off the idea of taking these bottles back. Is that something that's of concern to you?
Well, we're not actually involved in the return scheme. I think that it's been introduced because we have higher targets for plastic bottles in particular and aluminium cans. So there's higher targets for both of those materials. And the best way to reach those targets is to have a deposit return scheme. We know that they work well across other European states. And essentially the material then, when it's presented, we say presented into those machines, there's no contamination and it's of high quality. So that's really the background as to why a deposit return scheme has been introduced in Ireland. We know it's an extra step for the public. It is an extra step, but that's the way we will ensure that those plastic bottles and those aluminium cans are presented with less contamination, and they will be recycled to help reach those targets.
Okay, and hopefully it will. I mean, we all have this responsibility to our children and our children's children who will inherit this planet from us. And I know that most people try to recycle. Whether they get it right or not is a different day's work. And I suppose that's the point of this conversation. But not everybody can recycle, can they? I believe that there's some people who are in a park, apartments, for example, who don't have recycling facilities.
In apartment blocks, it can be difficult. I think most apartment blocks, they would have a communal area where you can bring your recycling to. But that's still, we still need to work with industry and work with recovery operators to make sure that there's facilities available for people to recycle. There's no doubt about it.
Okay, but the main message to people is to separate your waste and to have it dry and clean when it goes into the recycling bins.
Exactly, and loose. And we're really, I guess, for Earth Day, we're trying to mobilise the country to make a great effort, because we're implementing small changes, and if you embed them into your habits, it'll really make a difference.
Okay, well, thank you indeed, Laura, for joining us on the programme this morning. It'll give us all some food for thought. Laura Sherry, Head of Marketing and Communications with Repac.
Michael Reid on LMFM.
Well, as you've been hearing, the Irish Red Cross has reissued its appeal to everyone in the country to consider pledging a room in your house or a vacant property that you might have to war-weary Ukrainians. Let's speak to Niall O'Keefe, who's head of international and migration with the Irish Red Cross. Good morning, Niall. Thank you for joining us on the programme this morning. We're 2 years into the Russian attack on Ukraine and the displacement of people, many of them here, and accommodation really is a problem, hence the decision of the Irish Red Cross to reissue this appeal. Do you believe that there are potential properties out there to accommodate people in.
Yes, and thanks, Michael. Over the last 2 years, people right around the country, over nearly 5,000 homes, Irish homes right around the country, have opened their doors and have provided accommodation for nearly 11,000 Ukrainians. And that's a fantastic level of generosity. It's huge and really, really positive. And if you like Ireland at its best in terms of providing accommodation and support for people who are in need of protection. It's a very warm, it's a very practical way to provide support. And it's fantastic that generosity has been there. So we are relaunching our campaign, again, our appeal for looking for people who have some form of accommodation, a spare room, whichever they have in for themselves. And it might not be for everybody, but, you know, for people who haven't and who might be listening in, if they do have some free accommodation, and if it suits their circumstances, only if it suits their circumstances, that they would go on to the redcross.ie website and have a look at some of the stories there and to see the experience that people have had over the last 2 years. Like I say, nearly 5,000 homes up and down the country have provided accommodation, and with lots of good experiences there. So, we'd encourage people to go on it and have a look. And if it works for them, and if it might be something that's suitable for them, that they can engage and we can, you know, discuss with them more in detail.
I take it it's working for a lot of people in this country. I mean, if you take us back 2 years to when the assault on Ukraine happened and the Irish Red Cross made its initial appeal. You were asking people then to pledge a room or a vacant property for 6 months. We're now another 18 months on from that. And some of those people who moved into places 2 years ago are still in the same houses or apartments.
Yes, and there's a few elements of that, Michael. One part of it is the request was there for 6 months initially, and in many circumstances, it worked very well for people. It suited those who are the Irish host family, if you like, and also suited the Ukrainians who were here and benefiting from that support. And that was very positive. That it was an indicator of success that it was working well. It was extended for many houses, not for every household, but for many. I don't have the percentages off the top of my head, but I think it's up around nearly 75, nearly 80% of arrangements were extended. So that was very, very positive. Now, what has happened since then is that, obviously the situation in Ukraine has continued as it is. And unfortunately, there are still people who are fleeing the conflict in Ukraine, unfortunately. And that's a really difficult situation for those individuals. People who have in Ireland who have arrived from Ukraine, who have gone into that this pledged accommodation, many of them have continued on. The arrangement has worked for them. And also many of them have, if you like, graduated, be living independently, have moved out, have managed to get jobs, have managed to, you know, integrate more into the communities, have responded to whatever employment and vacancy needs that existed and have graduated and moved on that way. So I suppose our program and our approach generally is that if there is a way for the Ukrainian family to transition and to graduate and move on and to be living more independently, fantastic. And we certainly will be trying to have that as an approach. And then that Irish family who are the ones hosting, in some circumstances, you know, they're not going to renew again. It doesn't, you know, they did it once and that's fantastic. But then sometimes people do renew again.
Sure.
And we know again, there's quite a high number, like the vast majority of people have considered renewing again, and that's very positive. So we'd be asking, and we have asked those people if
and
they
lots will testify to a very positive experience. Do you have to own the property? Is this open to people who are living in council houses, renting social housing?
Yes, no. You have to be able to. Well, it depends on your own arrangement with what if you're renting the property yourself, and sometimes you're not allowed in to kind of sublet onwards. So generally, it's for people who own the property themselves and who have the free space. When people you know, if people are thinking of it seriously, you know, obviously they'd engage with us and we would set it up and go through a lot of the details and do it in a responsible way. And that's a really important part of it from our perspective.
Because you're not asking people to do this for nothing. It's 800 a month tax-free, which is sizable to a lot of people.
It's significant, yeah, and that's the second big part of it, and that's what the government have provided. And government are supporting this programme overall, and they're supporting this particular payment to households. So if households do take a family in, take in a Ukrainian family, they do get €800 a month, which is tax-free. It's called a recognition payment, and it's something which once the person or the family has been placed with you, then you get their details, and again we go through all of these details in time, but you can engage them with the Department of Social Welfare, who make that payment directly to you then, which is €800 a month tax-free. And it's a very positive initiative, and it's a recognition of the generosity, I suppose, that many households have provided.
Okay, very good. Well, the offer is there for people. You're asking them to offer up a room or a vacant property if there is something like that available. €800 as a recognition payment, and it's tax-free. And it's a simple matter of contacting the Irish Red Cross. Niall, thank you indeed for joining us today.
Many thanks.
Niall O'Keefe, Head of International and Migration with the Irish Red Cross. A lot of comments have just come to us. Gerry in Dundalk, one of the people in touch, saying, I live in an apartment in Dundalk. Every time I go down, I have to spend 10 minutes sorting out the recycling. I used to work with a waste management company, and I know what's what. No matter how many times I say it to people, I still have to sort out other people's rubbish, unfortunately. Thank you, Gerry, for sharing that with us. Another text from somebody who says, why is there a 7-day limit on using the deposit refund? I don't know the answer to that question. I didn't know that was the case for that matter. Thanks. We'll try and find out why that is and if it is open to change. Mark in touch, saying, I used to have a collection service many years ago. There were a few occasions where the bin wasn't collected and it was sitting in the garden full until the following 2 weeks when they came to collect it again. This happened too many times, and then I decided to cancel my account. Now I take all my rubbish to the local recycling centre. I received a call a year ago or thereabouts from the council asking how I'm disposing of my household waste, as my name was not down under any service. I explained why I choose to do it myself, and I find it cheaper to do it now than to pay an annual charge for a service that was not reliable. Nowadays, recycling is the norm for me. Thanks for that, Mark. Somebody else, John Conlon again. Thanks, John, for your message. He says, why can bottles and cans on the bring back scheme not be squashed? I think a lot of people asking that question now that they've had to try find space to store them, John. Thank you indeed. That is all we have time for today. Our time has run out on us once again. God willing, we'll see you for our next programme tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. right here on LMFM. Good morning. Bye-bye.
The Michael Reid Show podcast. Tune in weekdays from 9 on LMFM. To contact us, email now, michael@lmfm.ie.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.